All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Nun Hey Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ein chayavim mishum tuma elal orech 187 arochav 135. This is relying on a Mishnah in Midot that tells us that the size of the Azara was 187 by 135. And the Gemarot in other places, as well as the Mishnayot, go through the enumeration of how they get to this number of 187 and 135 and what took up that space, both in the length and the width of the Azara. But what Yehuda Amar Shmuel are saying is, you're only chayav for entering into the Mikdash, Bituma, which is Tumat Mikdash Vekodoshav, which involves a chiyuv karet, if you enter into the area of the Azara, which is that area of 187 by 135. Tani Tana Kameid Rav Nachman, someone was saying over a baraita in front of Rav Nachman, Kol Azara Ita Kupay Zayin Arochav Kuvlamet Hey. Same idea that the Azara's dimensions were 187 by 135. Amalei, Hachi Amar Abo. This is what my father said. It's interesting here that Rav Nachman is quoting his father. We don't see it so often. We see it on occasion. It's also interesting that it's Rav Nachman has a bright that's right in front of him that's very similar to the memra of Shmuel. Rav Nachman learned by Shmuel in his younger years. And we saw a little while ago, that Rav Nachman's father was one of the Sofrim in the Beit Din of Shmuel. So here he's quoting his father, who is likely Rabbeinu Yaakov, although Rashi thinks it's Rabbeinu Yitzchak. And that's a machloket about Stam Rav Nachman and Shas. Is he Rav Nachman bar Yaakov, which is the view of the Balei Tosafot? Or is he Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, which is the view of Rashi? So here it's either his father Rabbeinu Yaakov or his father Rabbeinu Yitzchak. Well, it seemed like the Balei Tosafot, they were pretty compelling suggestion that it was Stam Rav Nachman was Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So here it's his father, Rabbeinu Yaakov. Kogon zeh, kohanim nichnasim l'sham, v'ochlim sham kodshei kodashim, v'shochatim sham kodshim kailim, v'chayavim mishum tuma. What the father of Rav Nachman adds is that this din is not uniquely associated with tuma, but this din has application to other items, including the ability to eat kodshei kodashim, as well as the shchita of the kodshim kalim. So the shchita kodshim kalim we spent time on yesterday's daf, figuring out that they can be b'chol makom b'azara. They can be done anywhere in the azara. How is it possible to have shchita kodshim kalim throughout the azara? Those were the solutions that were brought by the Gemara yesterday. You had the pishpishim that were on the side of the ulam. You had the lul that was behind the kodesh kodeshim that gave you access to all areas in the azara. That means that the din of Tuma, the din of Shchitat Kodshim Kalim, as well as the eating of Kodshei Kodashim are all associated and are uniquely associated with the area of the Azara itself. Mar says, Limutei Mai. What does that come to exclude? If you think that that is the entirety of the Azara, where are you thinking that they could eat? Where are you thinking that you'd be Chayav for Tuma? Or where are you thinking you could do Shchita that's not in the Azara? Something that is outside the Azara, but you would have a hava minute to think that it was included in any of these dinim. If you think it comes to exclude the windows, the doorways, and the thickness of the wall, Rashi says here, on top of the wall, because the doorways are already the thickness in the wall. Gemara Pesachim just notes that here the roofs of items in the Mikdash were Neranit Kadesh. Therefore, when it speaks of being on top of something, it has to be that it's the top of that unit, but is level with the floor of the Azara. So that's a qualification given by the Gemara Pesachim. So you're going to exclude all of those, that they should not be included or not be captured in Kedushat Azara. Tanina, we have a Mishnah that explicitly says otherwise. Acholot, v'ovi acholma, tilifnim. When it comes to the windows and the thickness of the wall, they have a din as if tilifnim, as if they're in the Azara. We also know that by the doorways, because the Gemara tells us that Shar Nikanor was different than any other doorway, which it was not Nitkadesh, so that the Mitzorah could come all the way up and get his Matan Dam and Matan Shemen. So that was unique to Shar Nikanor. But all the other doorways were Kilifnim, Nitkadesh Ka'azara. So then that can't be the Mi'ute, these items, because these items are delineated as being a part of the Azara. Hello, the Mi'ute Lishkot. Coming to exclude the chambers that are around. The case must be an instance where these lishkot are built out in the chol, outside the perimeter of the azara, but they open up into the azara. What the Gemara is doing is narrowing down the scope that these items are not included in the azara, but it's a certain type of lishkas, a certain type of chamber. That has to do with the rules of chambers and their kedusha, which the basic three possibilities are: if you have a chamber that's built even in the kodesh, but its doorway opens up into the chol, it's classified as being chol. You have a chamber that's built and opens up into the kodesh, even if it's built in the chol, it has a din of kodesh. If you have a chamber that's opened up both to the chol and to the kodesh, then the dividing line is the wall of the azara. Whatever would have been the perimeter of the azara, along that line, whatever is on the outside of that line is chol, whatever is on the inside of that line is kodesh. What the Gemara says here is we must be speaking about a case where they're built in the chol, and they open up into the kodesh. So the Gemara's question is, Vatznan, don't we have a mission that says tochan kodesh? A lishka that is built in the chol and opened up into the kodesh is kodesh. Our answer is midrabanan. That's only a din derabanan. They're kodesh midrabanan, not midoraita. What the Gemara is suggesting now is these lishkot that are built b'chol, and as Rashi notes over here, that when they're built b'chol, it means that they are not included in the kedushat ha'azara. Rashi says, "Emutei nichnas lishkot habnuyot chutzolo." They're built outside the azara. Uptucho l'tucho shelo nitkadshu b'kedushat azara. They never got the kedushat azara b'shayrei mincha u'b'shir shel pigayim u'b'urim v'tumim shemikadshim b'enet azara u'b'alicha saviv. Like we said in the Gemara and Shavuot for the consecration of the azara, how they did it. These items were not consecrated along with the Azara. They are extended Kedusha. They gain their Kedusha, their accessibility, their entry and egress is into the Azara. So then they take on the Kedusha Azara. But they are not inherently part of the Kedusha Azara because they were built outside the perimeter of the Azara. They gain their Kedusha from the fact that you enter into them through the Azara. So their Kedusha is a derivative Kedusha of the Azara, not the Azara itself. And the Gemara is suggesting now the statement of the father of Nachman was coming to say the Azara of 187 by 135 comes to exclude these lishkot. Gemara is puzzled by that because we have a Mishnah in Maaser Sheni that says tochan kodesh, that they are kodesh. So how could it be that you tell me they're not kodesh when the Mishnah says they are kodesh? It says that is midrabanan. That Mishnah that tells you are kodesh is a rabbinic kedusha. As Rashi notes over here, midrabanan. Mitzvah chachamim ish lo yikansu lehem v'tumah, aval karet v'kurban leka. Means that there is an isur tumah midrabanan, but it's not subject to the regular rules of tumat mikdash v'kodashah, which is karet, do b'shogeg, would bring a kurban, ole b'yoreid. That's not true over here, because they're only tamei midrabanan. Your question is a fair question, which is, practically, if the only access to this lishka is through the Azara anyway, then what's the issue of Tumah Midrabanan in these areas? You either have to answer that the individual became Tamei in this location, while they were in the location, or, like we learned in the Gemara in Shavuot, that you have to take the shortest route out. So say, as far as the Azara is concerned, if he took the shortest route out, there we discuss what that means time-wise, distance-wise, he takes the shortest route out, and then he goes into this Lishka on the way out, which then he might not have been in violation when he was in the Azara, but now he's in violation when he enters into this lishka. He'll have to come up with some scenario where he becomes tamei or problem only exists inside of the lishka. Practically, I don't know if these types of lishkot existed, but the Gemara is suggesting if you had a lishka like this, it would not have a din d'oraita of tumah. It would only have a din tumah d'rabbanan. Where it says, ude oraita lo. Is it really true that this is only a rabbinic kedusha, not a Torah kedusha? Vatanya. Don't we have a braita? Lishkot bniyot b'chol uptuchot kodesh. Lishkot that are built outside the perimeter of the Azara, but they open into the Azara. Minayin shkoanim nichnasim sham. How do we know that koanim go in there? Bochlim sham kodshei kodeshim v'shayrei mincha. And they're allowed to eat the kodshei kodeshim and the shayrei mincha. Talmud Omar, the pasuk says, b'chatzar omoed yuchlu, that in the courtyard of the Omoed, you can eat it. HaTorah ripta chatzirot harbei etzel achila achat. Says for one achila, the chatzirot are all open to you. That means that anything that is considered or classified as part of the chatzir, not just the physical chatzir itself, which is equivalent to the Azara, but even Chatzerot, other areas that somehow are included in the Azara, one can't eat over there. The Pasuk says, "Venotari mimeno yochlu aron ubenav, matzot te'achel bimakom kadosh, chatzar omoed yochlu." Either the riboy comes from the fact that it says te'achel bimakom kadosh, which already means that I've located it for you. And then it says, "V'chatzar omoed yochlu," which indicates that there's an additional area that is included. Or, because it says, "Notari menu yochlu aron ubenav, matzot te'achel," and then yochlu at the end of the pasuk. So you have three different achilot in a chatzer. Indication is that there are multiple locations or multiple chatzerot where one can eat. It teaches you that you have the capacity to eat in all of these different areas. As Rashi notes over here, it's okay when you're speaking about something l'chumra to say it's derabanan. So for instance, if you're saying there's a problem of tumah, that's a problem that could be a din derabanan because that's the hachmir. Over here, where you're allowing the individual to eat in this area, that has to be doraita because the chachamim don't have a right to come along and say, "Timi derabanan kras matu, heche kilu chachamim la'akor davar." What right do the chachamim have to be okay davar la'akshir makom chol achilat kodshei kodashim? To make it that you can eat kodshei kodashim in a place that's not permitted. So it's clear here that we're talking on a do'uraita level. Now obviously the person who's quoting this braita believes that that which is applicable to achilat kodshei kodashim is also going to be true with regards to the other areas of halacha here, and that everything is do'uraita. Amarova, Rava's answer to him is l'achila shiny. Eating is different. Kodshei kodashim have a different rule about where they're eating, versus the din of Tumah, versus the din of Shechitat Kodshei Kalim. Because we had the father of Nachman equate all three of those areas. Whereas here now we're indicating that maybe there's a din d'oraita of Achilat Kodshei Kodashim, but Shechitat Kodshim Kalim and Tumah don't have a din d'oraita in this location. Aval inyan Tumah lo? Is that really true that by Tumah it's not d'oraita? V'atanyo, lishkot avniot uchol, upto uchol to kodesh. If you have a lishka that is built in the chol, opens up in the kodesh, kohanim nichnisim sham, ve'ochlim sham kodshei kodoshim, which is what we just stated, that you're allowed to eat kodshei kodoshim there, and that would be doraita. Ve'ein shochtim sham kodshim kalim. You're not allowed to do shchita of kodshim kalim there. Ve'chayavim mishum tumah. And you are chayav for tumah. So here you have, which is that it is an area where you're allowed to eat kodshei kodoshim. It is an area where you will be chayav for tumah. It is not an area that is qualified for kodshim kalim. But at least from this braita, you would seem to indicate that at least two of these items are doraita, and that would include tumah being a din doraita. Why would you then exclude them from being a part of the azara? You're telling me the mute lishkot, this lishka is excluded. I have a braita saying that it is included. It's a braita where it's saying that you are chayav for tumah over here. Gemara says, wait a minute. Lava mart, ain't shochatim? Didn't you bring in that braita that you can't be shochet kodshim kalim there? Tani nami, he meant it to read, ain't chayavin. You're not chayav for tumah. Gemara says, bishlomo ain't shochatim. Makes sense to say that you can't be shochet kodshim kalim there. Be'ina mikineged apetach beleka. Because you need it to be opposite the entranceway to the oel moed, or entranceway to the Heichal, and you don't have that. Ela ain't chayavin, am I? But with regards to Tumah, you don't have an additional requirement that it be petach o moed, so then why shouldn't you be chayav for Tumah? So, velita meich, ain't shochatim, milo askinan, diika shchita keneged petach. Why aren't you allowed to do shchita? Who says that the shchita in this instance is not done keneged petach? Rashi learns this literally, keneged petach. As Rashi noted yesterday, there's a difference between lifnei petach and keneged petach. Keneged petach means directly opposite the doorway. Lifnei petach means in any area that has a line of sight to the petach. So here Rashi takes the Gemara literally and says, "Dika shchita keneged petach." That literally you have some sort of lishka where Rashi says faces the doorway of the Beit HaChalifot, which yesterday were one of the pishpishim, and so you have a lishka that's b'riyavachol. It has a doorway that faces the doorway of the Beit HaChalifot, and you're doing the Shechita right in that doorway. So you have a direct line to the Petach Omoed. It's really Keneged Petach Omoed. And who says you can't do a Shechita there? If you're telling me the disqualification is because of the Petach Omoed, And here he's in a lishka, standing opposite the Petach Ol Moed. Why shouldn't that work? Now, the easier way to learn this would to just say, has nothing to do with being directly opposite the Petach Ol Moed, just has to be that he has a line of sight. He's shechting it within the lishka, where he has a line of sight to a Petach Ol Moed, which is the way that we defined it yesterday, and what allows you to have Kodshim Kalim. So let's say the same thing over here, that you are in a situated in a place within the lishka that gives you visibility to a doorway or a petach ol moed. The ileka, if he's not in a place where he has, according to Rashi, opposite the doorway of the Beit HaKhalifot, or according to what we suggested, he doesn't have a line of sight to the petach ol moed, the ma'itzvich. Why do you have to tell me that he can't shecht there? It's obvious that if he can't see the petach ol moed, or if he's not opposite the petach ol moed, that doesn't qualify for shechting a kodshim kalim. So the only reason to tell me it doesn't work is in a case where you would have thought it would have worked. So here, you would have thought it would have worked because he has line of sight, or he's opposite the doorway of the petach ol moed. El avagav dekos shochit keneged petach. Even though he's shechting in a place which should have been okay because it's keneged petach, tani, the brayta still says, ein shochatim, bishom delo kadish. Reason that it must be that he's not allowed to shecht there is because it's not kadosh. It doesn't qualify as being part of the azara. So tani nami ein chayavin. So the same thing with regards to tumah. If it's not kadosh for the shechita of kodshim kalim, it's also not kadosh for tumat azara. If you become tamei and enter into the azara, so the gemara would now assume the din of a lishka that is bechol and faces into the kodesh is chol, and it does not have a din of the Azara. We have a Mishnah that tells it's Kodesh, Mide Rabbanan. But then we seem to have a Braita that indicates that you can eat Kodshi Kodeshim over there, which would seem to indicate that it is Kodesh Midoraita. Rabbi says, Shani Achila. Achila Kodshi Kodeshim has its own world. So that is allowed over there. But otherwise, it's Chol. It's Chol from the perspective that you can't Shecht Kodshim Kalim there, even though you're Lifnei Petach Ol Moed. It's also chol from the perspective of tumah. If you enter there with tumah, you're not going to be chayav karet. You're not chayav a korban olev yoreid. But for kodshei kodeshim, you are. You're going to be allowed to eat it there. That's Rava's conclusion here. The way that he reconciles with the braita that says that kodshei kodeshim can be eaten there midoraita, and the fact that kodshim kalim and tumah do not apply there midoraita, and that would explain why the Azara comes to exclude those areas of the Lishkot. The areas of the Lishkot are excluded is because it's not Kodesh Midoraita. So even though Rav Nachman's father told us that Lishkot are different than the Azara, I mean there are three dinim in the Azara, and those three dinim come to exclude the Lishkot, which would imply even Kodesh Kodeshim cannot be eaten there, Rava comes along to say, you're right, they're not Kodesh Midoraita. There happens to be one exception, which is Kodesh Kodeshim can be eaten there. And that was my ask over here now. Wait a minute, for achilat kodshei kodeshim, don't you need petach or lifnei petach omayit? Batanya, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudah Omer, shnei pishpishim ayu bebeit ha-chalifot. So what we saw yesterday, that there were the two doorways in the beit ha-chalifot. Govan shmona, they were 8 amot high. Kedei lachshir et azara lachilat kodshei kodeshim. In order to permit one to eat in those areas of the azara, that now classified as lifnei petach ol moed, to eat kodshei kodeshim, ushchitat kodshim kalim, and to shecht kodshim kalim. Sounds from there that you need these pishpishim in order to qualify to eat kodshei kodeshim. That means that they're subject to the same rule as kodshim kalim and the shchitat of kodshim kalim. So Amaravina, sami mikan achila, drop achila from that braita. The reason you need the pishpishim is to shecht the kodshim kalim, not to eat kodshei kodeshim. Vaktiv, doesn't the pasuk say, bashluata pasar petach ol moed? You should, in the miluim, cook the basar at the entranceway to the ol moed. Sham tochlu oto. And there you're going to eat it. Sounds like you got to eat it. Petach ol moed. It's pretty straightforward that the pasuk seems to indicate that. My answer is kodshei sha'ah shiny. That was a one-time thing. That had to do with the miluim. That is not extrapolable to korbanot ledorot. Rashi says over here, it's a zerat hakatuv. Zerat hakatuv is that the miluim require you to be petach ol moed, to be visible in line of sight of the petach ol moed. But the dorot, there is no such requirement. The reason Rashi has to say that it is Egzeret HaKatuv is because generally we only find Koshei Sha'ah shiny. We don't generally find Koshei Sha'ah shiny when it's a Chumrah. When it's a Kula, we say don't extrapolate the Kula of the Dorot, because Koshei Sha'ah were unique. When it's a Chumrah, you would definitely generally say Kal V'Chomer. It's true by Koshei Sha'ah, should be true by Koshei Dorot as well. And unless we have specified otherwise, it would extrapolate anything that's a Chumrah to Koshei Dorot. So Rashi comes along and says, when it says here, shiny, means that it's Gzeret HaKatuv by Koshei Sha'ah, and you can't extrapolate it to Koshei Dorot, even though that would be your natural inkling, because of the fact that it's a Chumrah and not a Kula. So now what we conclude from here is, Kodshei Kodeshim do not have the same din as Shechitat Kodshei Kalim. Unlike what we had concluded yesterday, or thought yesterday, that the two were correlated, now we're separating the dinim. And Kodshei Kodeshim can be eaten anywhere in the Azara, and not only anywhere in the Azara, but even beyond the Azara, because of the Ribui that comes from the Pasuk, B'chatzar O'moed Yochlu. B'chatzar O'moed Yochlua makes a Ribui of Mikomot, where you can eat the Kodshei Kodeshim. And it says that anything that is a chatzer, anything that is accessible from the Azara, is a permitted place to eat Kodshei Kodeshim. But that's uniquely associated with Kodshei Kodeshim. That's a special dispensation for the Achilat Kodshei Kodeshim. With regards to Tumat Mikdash V'Kodeshav, and with regards to Shechitat Kodshim Kalim, over there, it's only within the boundaries of the Azara, 187 by 135, so that would exclude all the Lishkot. And in addition to that, for Kodshim Kalim and the Shechitat Kodshim Kalim, you need Lifnei Petach Ol Moed. It turns out yesterday that we solved that problem and the whole Azara was included, but nevertheless, you have that additional qualification. That means that the Lishkot, that are B'niyot Pechol, but face into the Kodesh, they're only Kodesh Midrabanan. That means if you enter with there with Tumah, there's no Chiyuv Koreit, no Chiyuv Korban. If you shech Kodshim Kalim there, they are psudim. The only thing that you can do there is eat Kodshei Kodeshim midoraita, because of the fact that there's a ribui of the pasuk. And that's what was meant by the father of Naf Nachman, that all these three dinim apply in the Azara. They don't apply by the Lishka, but that means two out of the three don't apply by the Lishka. Eating Kodshei Kodeshim technically can't be there, even though he grouped them all together. That was in terms of the permissibility aspect of it. In terms of the impermissibility, or where it doesn't apply, two out of those three are excluded from the case of the Lishka, but Kodshei Kodeshim have their exceptional rule that you're allowed to eat there. All right, now, Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Abudimi, minayin ladam shenifsal b'shkiyat hachama. How do you know that a korban that is shechted on a particular day, that the dam that you have from that animal must end up in the Mizbeach that day, and it can't go past nightfall? Rashi over here suggests the nature of the Gemara's question is, you might have thought that if you put it on the Mizbeach, that somehow would save the situation. We have this principle with regards to Emurim. Emurim are subject to Lina, which means if they're left overnight, then they have to be burnt in the morning, they're no longer qualified. But if they are placed on the Mizbeach, it's called Halanat Mizbeach, then they don't become disqualified. The Mizbeach is able to protect them from becoming lina or expiring overnight. So Rashi says the havamina of the Gemara was that maybe you should be allowed to do the same thing with regards to dam. And when it comes to dam, if you put it up on the mizbeach, then maybe it would be makshirit to zrika lemachar. V'lo mahani le halana berosh mizbeach, l'shure lezrika lemachar. It's not allowing you to use halana to mizbeach in order to do zrika in the morning. So that's what Rashi's view is, that he's coming to tell you, don't think that that's going to work, and he's going to bring a pasuk to prove his point. The Balei HaTosafot don't understand that. They have a number of questions on that. He says, first of all, the Tema, I don't understand. According to both opinions, if you think Lina on the Mizbeach doesn't help, okay, I can understand why there'd be a problem. But then what was the Havamina? If you think that Lina works, why do you need a pasuk to tell me? Because even if you think Lina works, it's still overnight, and at night you can't put the dam on the Mizbeach. So what's the point of putting the dam on the mizbech to protect against lina, if anyway in the end you can't do anything with it because it's going to expire before you have an ability to use it? I would thought it doesn't become pasul. Just like dam is not subject to pigul minotar because it's a matir, so too it would not be subject to a problem of expiring, and you'll be able to leave it overnight. Says, Mi'utam zei nachon. That doesn't make so much sense. And then he comes to his final answer to explain what the issue is. And now this has major implications of Halacha, which is, V'yesh lamar, leish tefereish, t'shkiyat t'chama, hainu t'chilat shkiyah, kodem tzei t'chul chavim. And when it says here, that's going to pasul shkiyat t'chama, that's the beginning of the shkiyah, because amar, t'shkiyat t'chama, but tzei t'chul chavim, dalet milin. From the time that the sun sets until tzei t'chul chavim is 4 mil, or the equivalent of 72 minutes. And that is the famous sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, which today a lot of people, especially in Eretz Yisrael, didn't necessarily keep Rabbeinu Tam. Nevertheless, Rabbeinu Tam was widely accepted by the Rishonim and was paskin in Shulchan Aruch, as well as in the Ramah, that the Halacha is like the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam's sheet is premised on a stira between the Gemara and Shabbat and the Gemara and Pesachim, and the Gemara and Brachot, which indicate what is the elapsed time between Shkiyah and Tzeitu Kukovim. In one place it says it's Dalet Milim, 4 mil. In another place it says it's 3/4 of a mil. So how do you reconcile between 3/4 of a mil and 4 milim? That's a big gap in time. One is 72 minutes, and one is like around 15 minutes long. So how do you have a situation in which you have the Gemara telling you that the period of Ben Hashmashot, the period between Shkiyat HaChama and Tzeitu Kukovim, is such a wide differentiation? It could be affected by latitude, but the truth is the Gemara is speaking in the same location. It's not speaking in different locations. So Rabbeinu Tam comes up with a huge chiddush. His premise for the chiddush is completely incorrect, but conceptually what he says is true. His chiddush is based on the fact that the Gemara believes that the rakia, the firmament, was a thick cover that existed over the earth. And when the sun set, it went through a hole in the firmament, which was that there was a chalon, which the Gemara speaks about, chalon. And actually when we dive in, we speak about the chalonei rakia, which are the windows of the rakia. The windows of the rakia are the window that allows the sun to go through the rakia to set. And it's the window that allows the sun to come through the rakia in the morning to rise. So they believe that what happened during the day was the sun went through the sky. At night, it penetrated through the rakia. And then overnight, it climbed over the rakia to return to the eastern side, and then entered through the rakia again in the morning. They didn't think that the sun, now obviously it doesn't happen this way either, even for us, but they didn't think that the sun went under the earth. What's really the truth is that the earth's going around, but the way that we view it, or the way we see it, is the sun descends below the horizon, goes under the earth, and then comes back up on the other side. That's just our perception of it. So the rakia is a thick barrier, so that once the sun's on the other side of rakia, you can't see the light of the sun. So the sun, when it's returning overnight, goes behind the rakia and overnight. The Rabbeinu Tam Shita is premised on that understanding of the sun, which is that the sun actually has to set 2 times. The sun sets the first time when it's no longer visible on the horizon. That is when the sun enters the rakia, enters the chalon rakia. There is a second sunset because while the sun is in the rakia, the sky is still light. Only once the sun reaches the other side of the rakia does it become completely dark, and therefore there's a second shkiyah. The first shkiyah is the sun leaving the horizon, entering into the rakia. The second sunset is it exiting the rakia on the other side, where it becomes completely dark, and that is Tzeit HaKokhavim. So the Rabbeinu Tam does this because of his understanding based on the Gemara as to how the sun works, and that is that there's a shkiyah rishonah, which is when the sun leaves the horizon. There's a shkiyah shniyah, where the sun is going to leave the rakia. The first shkiyah takes place 4 mil, 72 minutes before Tzeitu Kukhavim, before it exits the other side of the rakia. The second shkiyah takes place 3/4 of 18, which is roughly 13 and a half minutes, which is when the sun's going to exit the rakia on the other side. That's the second Ben Hashmashot area. As far as Rabbeinu Tam is concerned, the first shkiyah is no impact. It's still full daytime till you reach the second shkiyah. At the second shkiyah, that is, begins Ben Hashmashot, and then 13 and a half minutes later, you're at Tzeit HaKokhavim. That's Rabbeinu Tam Shita. Now, in general, the poskim are choshesh to Rabbeinu Tam the Chumrah, which is that they don't say that you can do Melacha going into Shabbat until second shkiyah of Rabbeinu Tam, but they say you have to stop at shkiyah. But on the other end, the Tzeita Shabbat, you have to wait for the Rabbeinu Tam's Tzeita Kochavim, which is 72 minutes later. That was generally the practice. We start to see later on in the time of the Rishonim, first time, the Bach quotes that against what he thought was right, and he criticizes the people. They would go to the fairs. These were the commercial fairs on Friday, and they would stay there till late on Friday, using the Rabbeinu Tam to start Shabbat later. And he criticizes them, says nobody ever believed that the Rabbeinu Tam was the Kula. It was only the Chumrah to say that we're Choshesh for the fact that it's still Yom for things at night. But for Yom, the cutoff is Shkia, and generally that is the view of the Poskim, that pass like Rabbeinu Tam, we're Choshesh l'shnei atzadim. Although there still are practices by many groups of Chassidim who do daven mincha like the Rabbeinu Tam, which means they daven after Shkia. We mean the Shkia that we know as leaving the horizon, but before the second Shkia of the Rabbeinu Tam. And they have the practice to keep that of the Rabbeinu Tam. And even some of them do malacha into the periods of the Rabbeinu Tam. So that's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. Now, even though practically the Rabbeinu Tam is completely incorrect because his understanding of the sun was incorrect, nevertheless, conceptually he is right. And that is because the phenomenon of the sun setting does exactly what he says, but not for the reason that he said. And that is that when the sun sets, leaves the horizon, you no longer see the sun. But unlike any other planet in the solar system, when the sun sets on Earth, the light is still there, even though the sun has set. If you're on a different planet, if you're on the moon, once the sun sets, it comes completely dark immediately. On the other hand, on Earth, where you have an ozone layer, you have an atmosphere that's around, what ends up happening is the sun, after it's set, the light refracts over the angle of the atmosphere. That means that even though it's left the horizon, where you are standing, you still see light because of that refraction. That angle, as it gets steeper and steeper, the light starts to darken and darken till you reach an angle where there's no longer any light that is visible from the sun. In truth, the Rabbeinu Tam is brilliant in that sense, which is that he did pick up on a phenomenon, which is that the light doesn't disappear when the sun sets, that there's a residual light in the sky. So even though he described it in a manner that is not necessarily true, but his concept is correct, which is that there are two shkiyot. There's a shkia when the sun sets, and there's a separate shkia when there's no longer any light in the sky. And truthfully, the Mikorot in Tanakh, Mikorot in Chazal, are really playing or toying with these two ideas. How do you define what's the end of the day? Do you define the end of the day because it's night? Or do you define the end of the day because the sun's not there? What defines day? In Maaseh Bereishit, when Hashem creates the world, he says, well, the Shemesh is for the Yom, and then the Areach v'Kochavim are for the Laila. So now, how do you define what's Yom and Laila? But the truth is that the Areach shows up during the day, and the sun is there at night because of the fact that the light still exists. So then you have to play between these two items. How do you define night and day? And that's exactly what creates this problem of Benesh Mashot, or the problem that's really noted here by the Rabbeinu Tam, which is you have a sunset, which is the sun leaving the horizon, but you have another sunset, which is the light leaving the atmosphere, or you're no longer light that is visible to you. And so the Rabbeinu Tam might be correct, even though the premise of what he said is incorrect, what he said might actually be correct because of this differential or issue of between sunset and the light leaving the horizon. So for that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam says there are two shkiyot, and the Rabbeinu Tam throughout Shas tries to reconcile this with different statements of the Gemara. And what he says is that the Gemara uses the term shkiyat hachama when it's referencing to the first sunset. When it says mishetishka hachama, that's a reference to the second sunset. There's still some exceptions to that rule in Shas where he has to figure out what to do with it, but generally that's his view. And what he suggests over here is shenifsal b'shkiyat hachama. It says here, it's nifsal b'shkiyat hachama, means the first shkiya. It's shkiyat hachama, not mishetishka hachama. So he says the chiddush of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdumi here is, even though it's totally daytime, we're not at the second shkiya yet. It's only the first shkiya, it goes pasul there. So gzeirat hakatul, that at the first shkiya, over, even though it's still daytime. Had it been just governed by daytime, it would have been able to go until the second shkiya, 58 and a half minutes, after the first shkia, you would have been able to do matnot dam. This tells you the first shkia is the cutoff. So that's the view of the Balei HaTosafot using this Rabbeinu Tam to try to explain what the Gemara is doing over here. Why is it telling us that it's nifsal belaila? Why isn't that obvious that it's nifsal belaila? Rashi comes up with this idea of halanat mizbeach, which Tosfot has problems with, because what does the Alanat Mizbeach do for you anyway? Shenemar, Biyom Hakrivo et Zivcho Yeachel. Biyom, Shata Zoveach, on the day that you do the Shechita, Ata Makriv. Then you do the Hakrava, the Hakrava is the Hakrat Adam. So Biyom Hakrivo et Zivcho Yeachel. So Biyom Hakrivo is governed by the Zvicha, by the Shechita. There's a correlation between the Shechita and the Hakrava, the placing of the Dam Mizbeach. That is, the Dam Mizbeach must be done on the day that you shech the animal. Biyom Shiyata Zovech, Yata Makriv. And the day that you didn't do the Shechita, you may not put the Dam on the Mizbeach. And this is the limud from the Pasuk that correlates those two items. Hami Baile the Gufei. Wait a minute, don't we need that Pasuk to teach us the din itself as to when Zman Achilat Shlamim is? Which is that we learn from there, Bim Nedor Nedava, Zevach Korbano, Bayom Akrivo, Tzivko, Yeachel, Umi Macharat, Vanotar Mimenu, Yeachel. This is the primary source for the fact that Kochim Kalim and Shlamim are eating for 2 days and one night. Because it tells here, Bayom Akrivo, Tzivko, Yeachel, Umi Macharat. You're allowed to eat it that day and the next day. So how can you tell me you're using it for a din to teach you that you have to do the Hakravat Adam? The Nitina Dam on the same day as the Zvicha, when it's there for a different purpose. Imkei Neimakra, Biyom Zevcho Yeachel. Then all you needed the Pasuk to say was on the day of the Zvicha, it is eaten. Hakrivo Lomali. What do you need the additional Hakrivo to teach you? You could have read the Pasuk when it made just as much sense. If you say, Im Nedron Nidava, Zevach Korbano, Biyom Zivcho Yeachel, Omimacharat. Why do you need Biyom Hakrivo et Zivcho Yeachel? Shvamina, Biyom Shata Zoveach Ata Makriv. Yom Shita Zoveach Iata Makriv. Shkita and the Tinatam have to be done on the same day. The Delma Hakikama Rachmana. Maybe this is what the Torah is saying. Ikarib Dam Haidna, Nitachel Basar Haidna, Ulamachar. If you do the Tinatam today, then you eat the Basar on that day, and then the subsequent day. Ikarib Dam Lamachar, if you put the Dam in the Zbeach tomorrow, Nitachel Basar Lamachar, Uliyom Arachra. You'll eat the basar tomorrow, and the day after that, because the pasuk actually sounds like that. On the day that you put it on the mizbeach, the dam on the mizbeach, that's the starting point for you. That's the day you eat it. And then makarat, and then the next day. So all it's saying is that's the trigger for the start of the 2 days and one night. Put it on the mizbeach. So you put it on today, it starts today. You put it on tomorrow, it'll start tomorrow. If that was what you wanted to teach us, say, Biyom Hakrivo, Yeachel. Then you don't need the word Zivcho there at all. You could just say, Biyom Hakrivo. On the day that you put the Dam on, then you can eat it. Zivcho, Lomali. So what do you need Zivcho for? Shmamina, Biyom Shata Zoveach, Ata Makrivo. Biyom Shayata Zoveach, Iata Makrivo. On the day that you put it, do the Shechita, then you can do the Hakrava, you can put the Dam on the Mizbeach. The day that you don't do the Zvicha, the Shechita, you can't put the Dam on the Mizbeach. So you're learning out all of these dinim. The first din is that, yes, the 2 days and one night start from when you put the dam on the mizbeach, but there's a limitation as to when you can put the dam on the mizbeach. That's zivcho, when you do the shechita. That will govern when you can do the dam, and then the dam will govern when the timer starts. The shechita determines when you have to do the akrava, the matanat dam. Once you do the matanat dam, the timer starts, and you have 2 days and one night from whenever you did the akrava, that dam. In addition, you have in the pasuk that you have 2 days to eat it, and so it teaches you all of these dinim associated with this pasuk. Obviously, this is relevant to Kodoshim. It's brought over here because it's relevant to Kodoshim. But why is it brought over here? It's because we're about to enter into the world of what is the timing of Kochim Kalim and Ishlamim. And that's how it relates to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah tells us that the din of Ishlamim is Shnei Yamim Belayla Echad. And the Gemara now is going to figure out the Shnei Yamim Belayla Echad. This was part of that puzzle that we've started, and that's what this Gemara is almost like an introductory piece into the next Gemara, which is Itmar Hamechashev the Or Shlishi. Someone who has a machshava of pigul to hold over the item until the night of the third day, which means that on the day that you shechted the korban, if you have machshava to do something chutz lizmano, then it becomes pigul. Now chutz lizmano for the dam is shkiat hachama. Chutz lizmano for the emurim is alot hashachar. Chutz lizmano achilat basar is outside the time frame in where you're permitted to eat the basar. For shlamim, that is 2 days and one night. That means the day that you brought the korban, the night afterwards, the second day, and then the night after the second day has this limbo status. In that second night, you are not allowed to eat the korban, but it does not become notar, or it's not classified as notar, until the morning of the third day. Now, you have this interim stage, like a ben shmashot, where you're no longer allowed to eat the korban shlamim, but you can, don't burn it until the morning. So the question is, that interim night, what is the status of that, or lashlishi, the night before the third day? If you have a makshava to eat the basar during that night time, are you outside the time bounds? Are you inside the time bounds? That's the itmar over here. I'm a chashev lashlishi. Chizki amar kasher. There's no makshavet pigul. You're not outside the time boundaries of the shlamim. Rabbi Yochanan amar, pasol. You can't eat it anymore. You're outside the bounds of the shlamim. Chizki amar kasher dahalo intak l'shleifa. What determines when you're outside the time boundaries is if you have to burn it. The notar is only burnt on the morning of the third day. That's when it'll be classified as pigul. If you have makshava to do it outside that time period, that's a makshavet pigul. The outside of Zman is when you can no longer eat it. Shkia, on the second day, you can't eat it anymore. If you can't eat it anymore, that's already considered to be outside the bounds. And therefore, if you did have a makshava to eat it during that period, Rabbi Yochanan says it is pigul. And now this makloket is, not surprisingly, also true by notar. Ocholo shlishi, forget about makshava about that night. How about if he actually eats it on the night after the second day? Ochel or shlishi, chizki amar pator. It's not notar. Delo intik l'sreifa. Because it's not ready to be burnt yet. So he's consistent. Notar and makshevet chutz l'zmano are connected. Makshevet chutz l'zmano is what would be the case if it was left until that period of time. So chizki is consistent. He says there's no notar or din of notar. If you eat it on the night after the second day, you're not chayav for notar, because notar only starts when you have to burn it. That's the morning of the third day. And similarly, if you have a makshava to eat it during that period of time, it's not pigul, because just like it's not notar, it's not considered to be makshava of pigul. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav. You're chayav if you eat notar that night. Da'it chilei me'achila. Once you can no longer eat it, that's called notar. It's notar, you're chayav, karet, for eating it. And if you have a makshava to eat it during that time, it also makes it into pigul, the korban. They are fundamental machloket as to what the status of that night is. Now what's interesting about the Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad is the fact that we have no archaka. As opposed to Yom V'Layla, korbanot that are brought for one day and one night, we say they cut off at chatzot. Over here, when it comes to a shlamim, he's allowed to eat Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad. We allowed him to eat it on the second day all the way till Shkiyat HaChama, and there's no archaka midirabanan. So the Balei HaTosafot will say on tomorrow's daf, that is because the Chachamim only put in a Archoka when there is a possibility of someone being unclear about the boundary. With regards to Alot HaShachar, somewhat of a fuzzy time period. That's number one. Number two is, it's also at night when people are tired and people go to sleep. Or they'll fall asleep and they'll wake up thinking that it's still nighttime. Whatever the reason is, there are risks at night. So there's a high risk that people could make mistakes with regards to when is the limit until when she can eat korbanot overnight. So Chachamim said, let's give an exact time, chatzot alayla, middle of the night will be the cutoff. And that way we have no questions. Nobody's going to bump into Alot HaShachar. Did we were before or after Alot HaShachar making decisions about that? They won't be on that gray area and we won't have any problems. But when it comes to both the daytime, we're not sleeping. And number two is Shkia is a clear demarcation. There's a clear time when the sun sets. You know the sun set. It's easy to see when the sun sets. The Alot HaShachar is about light. How much light there is in the horizon. That's something that's a little more amorphous. Shkiyat HaChama, where the physical sun leaves the horizon, that's something that's empirical that you can look at and say that's the end. For that reason, they say there's no Harkalka by the Kodshim Kalim of Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad. That's just as a sidebar. But now we're dealing with the Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad. What is the status of that interim night? That is where it's no longer edible, but it's not ready to be burnt because it's not classified as notar until the morning. Now we have Tanya Kavati de Rabbi Yochanan, a brayta that supports Rabbi Yochanan's contention here. Kodshim and Nechalim the Yom Echad. If you have Kodshim, they're eating for one day. These are Kodshei Kodashim. So those are eating for one day and one night. Machashvim b'daman mishitishka chama. In order for it to be pigol, you have to think about the dam, putting the dam in the mizbeach after sunset. But over here it says mishitishka chama, which creates problems for the Rabbeinu Tam. Because before we said it was Shkiyat HaChama. Mishetishka HaChama for Rabbeinu Tam is the second Shkiyah. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is, it's because of the Emurim here, which says, Mishayale Amud HaShachar, it kept an consistent construction of the verbs over here, and then it didn't change it. But really it means, Yershkiyat HaKama, not Mishintishka HaKama. He said just as a parallel structure, but not really because it means the second Shkiyah. Just pointing it out to you, because he mentions it, that this is one of the problems for the Rabbeinu Tam Shita. It says here, Mechshavim B'dama Mishintishka HaKama, sunset is the cutoff for dam. You have Machshav after that, you're going to have Pigul. And for the Basar and Emurim, with the Kodshei Kodashim, they expire at the same time. That is Amud HaShachar. So over there, if you have a Makhshav and Michutz Amud HaShachar, that will create Pigol. Kodshim and Echalim Lishnei Yamin V'layla Echad. Kodshim Kalim Lishlamim, where it's 2 days and one night. Mechashvim B'daman Mishitishka Chama. As far as the Dam is concerned, they have the same din, because Shkiyat HaChama is the cutoff. Emurim Mishalei Amud HaShachar. The Emurim are at sunrise. And that is because, as Rashi notes over here, the Dam and Emurim of Kodshei Kodashim and Kodshei Kolim are all classified as Kodshei Kodashim. That's why there's Mi'ilah on those items, even by Kodshim Kalim. There's Amud HaShachar for Emurim because they're not governed by the rules of Kodshim Kalim. Those parts of the animal that are going to go on the Mizbeach have a din of Kodshei Kodashim, and therefore their expiry is the same as Kodshei Kodashim. So if you have a Machshev to Chutz Lizmano for Kodshim Kalim, for Dam would be after Shkiyah, for Emurim would be after Alot HaShachar, Ubzara Mishitishka Chamash Neshnei Yamim. At sunset, on the second day, that's the cutoff in terms of Kodshim Kalim, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Sunset on the second day ends it. If you have Machshev at Chutz Lizmano at that point, that is Pigol, because it is classified as Notar, and it is classified as Chutz Lizmano. Son of Rabbanan. Yochol Yei Nechalim L'Or Shlishi. This is again, why all of this is brought over here, is to determine Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad, where do you know that from? Why is it a Shlamim Eden for Shnei Yamim U'Shnei Leilot? Why is it that it's only Eden for one night and not both nights? Edinu, it makes sense. Zvachim Nechalim Yom Echad U'Zvachim Nechalim Shnei Yamim. Kodshei Kodeshim are Eden for one day. Kodshim Kalim are Eden for 2 days. Ma Zvachim Nechalim Yom Echad Laila Achareihen. Just like Kodshei Kodeshim, where the night follows the day. This is a principle in the Mikdash. Unlike what we have where night precedes the day, in the Mikdash, the night succeeds the day. So over there, if you have a case of a Kodshei Kodashim, if you can eat it during the day, then the night as subsequent to that is also included in that time period. So too, those that are 2 days long, the night should follow the days, and you should be able to eat it for Shnei Yamim, Ushnei Leilot. Tamalomar, Ve'anotar, Ad Yom. Until it's left over to the day. During the day it's eaten, but you can't eat it the night of Shlishi. Now, this drosha is extremely difficult because the Gemara is quoting the pasuk that we saw before, and it's not clear that it's speaking about what the Gemara is suggesting over here. On the day that you bring it, umimacharat. And the next day, vanotar yom ha-shlishi ba'esh tisareif. That which is left over until the third day will be burned. The Gemara here parses the pasuk and quotes you, vanotar ad yom. That which is left over to the day. So Rashi claims over here that the limit is the following. Gabi achilak tiv b'kadoshim tiyu. But it says, v'yom zibachem yachel umimacharat. Vanotar ad yom. Ba'osh hu yom tochlano. While it's daytime, you should eat it. So Rashi takes it very literally. The problem you have with this, which is brought up by the Balei Tosafot and the Shita Mekubetzet over here, Perish Bakunchis, Pekasha, Danotar, Hifsik, Hayinyan. How can you claim that the Yom is referencing back to the eating of the Korban when it says, Ben Notar Ad Yom? The word Notar sits between the word Yom and the beginning of the Pasuk. So how can you say the word Yom is referencing back to the Achilah when the word Notar sits in between it? Rabbeinu Chaim Efresh, Ad Yom HaShlishi, Velo Yom HaShlishi Bechlal. That which is left until the third day, that is notar, v'lo yom ha-shlishi b'chlal. And for that reason, it's not eaten at the night before. What he's saying is that the word yom can have different meanings in Tanakh and in modern Hebrew as well. Yom can mean daytime, 12 hours of the day, or yom can mean 24 hours. So what the Rabbeinu Chaim is saying is, v'notar ad yom ha-shlishi, that which is on the third day, not third daytime, but the third day, is problematic. The third day begins after the night of the second day that you can eat. So that third day already is classified as being notar, and that's the cutoff. It is strange because the pasuk then is using two different time structures. It's talking about time structure of Kodashim, which says, eat on that day, the next night, and the next day, which is the night following the day. And then it says you on the Yom HaShlishi, which is the third morning, you have to burn it, it's no tire. And now Rabbeinu Chaim is saying, Yom HaShlishi doesn't mean the morning of the third day, it means the third day. On the third day, it is no tire, meaning that you can't have anything to do with it on the third day, but that's the night before the third day. That's a regular way of counting nights and days. It's an interesting view. The Shita Mikubetzet says something over here, that is also found in the Ramban, and that's very, very important. Nafkuminot, as well as Hashkopic issues, with regards to the Kodshim Kalim. The Shita Mikubetzet, you can see it in the first wide line of the Shita Mikubetzet, and he asks the same questions on Rashi. He says, Yishlomar, Tahai Vanotar, Lo Nifsal Kamar. When it says Notar in the Pasuk, it's not speaking about Notar in the traditional sense of Notar. Notar usually we think means it's expired, and it's past its time period, and now it needs to be burnt. That's how we think of Notar. El Notar, Shlo Achal B'Yom HaRishon, K'mitzvato. Notar is what's left over from the first day. You eat the korban on the first day. Whatever's left over, you can eat on the second day. The word notar, we associate it with the problem of notar, which means that it's expired. But the word notar can also be used to describe something that's left from day to day, even though it's still permitted to be eaten. So he says, but notar means that you didn't eat on the first day, now you can eat it on the second day. Ti'ikar mitzvah lochlo b'yom harishon. The primary mitzvah is to eat kodshim kalim on the first day. You have a dispensation to eat on the second day if you didn't finish it. But primarily, you should eat it on the first day. So then what it says, benotar ad yom, means that which is left over to the next day. The next day means yom ha-sheni. And that's what it's called notar. Afopish ne'achalim, the shneimim v'layla echad. Even though they're eating for 2 days and one night, the yom v'layla is the primary time. Cheinami ashkan shemikrei notar, afopish adayin kasher hu le'achila. And I'll bring examples to you, the fact that the word yontar is used, even though it's still kasher, the achila. So what he says here, the Ramban says it ala Torah by the Miluim, when it comes to kodshim kalim the shlamim, the primary eating time is the first day, and then what's left over to the second day you can eat. It's almost like tashlumim. It's almost as if the second day gives you a second chance for tashlumim it, but it's not the primary mitzvah. Primary mitzvah is to eat it on the first day. And that way you can interpret the pasuk and say that the notar is not referencing the notar in the classic sense, but yom shebchein yachel menacharat v'notar ad yom, that which is left over until the second day, pigohu, then it'll be ve'esh tisareif, that will be burnt in the fire because it's expired. Only a notar ad yom. That which is left over the second day you're allowed to eat. Beyond that, you're not allowed to eat. And that way the word notar is not interrupting. You can read the pasuk now and say, yom shebchein yachel menacharat v'notar ad yom, that you're allowed to eat. Then, Yom HaShlishi Beish Yisareif. When you get the third day, you gotta burn it. But that means that notar is not talking about notar in the classic sense of notar. It's talking about notar that was left from the first day to the second day. It's still difficult to read the pasuk, but it is a very important hashkafic view about Kodshim Kalim. And obviously has a nafkamina about whether we prefer you to eat the Kodshim Kalim on the first day, or do you look at both days as being an equal opportunity to eat the Kodshim Kalim. It's a very interesting Shita Mikubetzet. It's important because the Ramban al-Torah also has a similar view. And that's why he says you interpret the pasuk in that way. So now the Gemara has come to the conclusion that Shnei Yamim B'Layla Echad, Yachol Yisareif Miyad, you think you would have to burn it immediately? V'dinu, Zvachim Nechalim Yom Echad, Zvachim Nechalim Shnei Yamim. Yeah, Korbanot, Kodshei Kodashim, they're eating for 1 day, and Kodshim Kalim, they're eating for 2 days. Ma Zvachim Nechalim Yom Echad, Tekev L'Achila Sreifa, just after the expiry of the eating time, immediately there's a din of Sreifa. But Kodshei Kodashim, eat it that day, that night. The next morning, you burn it. And we know that, as Rashi notes over here, from the pasuk by the Miluim, V'imi vater mi'psar miluim emin alechem ad ha-boker, sarapta et ha-notar be'esh, lo yachel ki kodesh hu. Af zivachim ha-nechavim shnei yamim, tekev l'achila sreifa. If the achila period expires after the second day, you would expect that the sreifa should kick in immediately afterwards. Tamar lomar, b'yom ha-shlishi, ba'esh yisareif. On the third day, you burn it. Only on the third day. So Gemara is pressing the word yom to appear in both sections. Which is that, v'yom zivachem yachel macharat v'notar yom. And then, yom ha-shlishi ba'esh yisareif. And in that way, the esh yisareif will only happen v'yom ata sorfo, yata sorfo b'layla. Going to the sreifa during the day, not at night. So even though the time period for eating the shlamim expires 2 days and one night, So the second night is not included, and it's no longer edible. Nevertheless, you only burn it once you reach the morning, Bayom HaShilishit. And that way you're interpreting the word Yom, again, for the Rabbeinu Chaim in two different ways. Yom meaning day of the third day, and then the Gemara now says Yom is daytime. So for the Rabbeinu Chaim it's even harder, because he's interpreting the word there, Yom, both ways, based on the drasha of the Pasuk. For the Meshitta Mekubetzet and the Ramban, they're interpreting it the same way, which is Yom HaShilishit means the third day, but Yom there means daytime. The first one, it means Notarad Yom, means the daytime of the second day. And the other one means Yom HaShlishi, means the daytime of the third day. But they're consistent in using, interpreting the word Yom in the same way. So now, hashkafically, I just want to note here, it's very important, Rav Hirsch, who discusses the hashkafa of Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. Why is it that Kodshei Kolim Shlamim have a din of Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad? Why is it that the second night is not included? It's very strange. Even though the Gemara gives a drasha, we saw already the drasha is extremely difficult, and you would have thought, your habamin, it would be, that if you can eat it for 2 days, you can eat it for the subsequent nights, because that's the way that days work in the Mikdash. The day is permitted, the night afterwards is also permitted. Rav Hirsch gives a very, very interesting hashkafic explanation for that of the Shlamim. He says that there are korbanot, like the Kodshei Kodoshim, which are in the world of the Mikdash. They are Kodshei Hashem, and they live within the world of the Mikdash and the world of Kedushah completely. Kodshei Kalim are different because they not only live in the world of the Mikdash, they also live outside the world of the Mikdash. And that is that you can eat a Shlamim, not only in the Azara, L'Zichrei Kuna, can be eaten by anyone, even in the Chol Ha'ir, in all of Yerushalayim. And so what he says is that the Kodshim Kalim are an indication of the spread of Kedushah from the world of Kodesh, the world of the Azara, the world of the Mikdash, the world of the Shekhinah, out into what he calls the Chayei HaMishpacha, but in essence what he means is into the mundane world. That you're able to take Kedushah and infuse that which is outside the Mikdash with the Kedushah of the Mikdash. He says that's what a Korban Shlamim represents. It represents the infusion of Kedushah to HaMikdash into the daily life of the individual, into the daily experiences of the individual. That's why the Korban can be eaten not only in the Azara, but throughout Yerushalayim, with the whole Mishpacha, not only with the whole Mishpacha, but anywhere in Yerushalayim, in a place where the Mishpachot are found. So that's the idea of the Kodshim Kalim and the Shlamim. Given that, he says, now I can explain to you why the time period is Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. The first day of the Korban is governed by the Mikdash and the Kedushat HaMikdash. On the first day of a Kodshim Kalim, it's no different than a Kodshei Kodashim. It's 1 day and 1 night. It's Kodshei Kodoshim. And therefore, the time period will be governed by the time of the Mikdash, which is day followed by night. On the second day, which is what makes Kodshim Kalim unusual, similar to the fact that Kodshim Kalim can be eaten outside the walls of the Azara, so the second day is what makes it uniquely associated with outside the Mikdash. Well, if it's outside the Mikdash, then it's governed by time outside the Mikdash. Time outside the Mikdash is night goes before the day. And what he basically says is that his Shlamim is a combination of time in the Mikdash and time outside the Mikdash. You have a day and a night, which is the Mikdash time. Then you have a night and a day, which is Chutz the Mikdash time. And then if you combine the two of them, you get Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. And that explains the time period of a Shlamim. That would help explain why the Shita of the Ramban and the Shita of Mekubetzet are that you have to eat on the first day. Because on the first day, it has the status of Kodshei Kodashim, in a sense. That would be the primary time you want to eat it. That which is on the second day already is a downgraded view of Kedushah. But on the other hand, hashkafically, for the Rav Hirsch, you would want to eat it on the second day, because that's the whole indication that the Kedushah can leave the Mikdash. But at least you could explain or give some semblance of explanation for the Shita of the Ramban and the Shita based on this. You know, hashkafically, you would prefer that you ate on the second day to indicate the idea that the Kedushah passes out. But I thought it was a beautiful idea about the time and the overlap of the time of Mikdash and time of the Bulin. That's why Shnei Yamim Laila Echad, that's why you have this strange setup of time with regards to the Shlamim or the Kodshei Kalim. All right, next Mishnah, which is the final Mishnah in Ezu Mukuman, which brings us the final grouping of what are known as Kodshim Kalim. They are mostly known as subsets of Shlamim because they have trappings like a Shlamim, but they are even a downgraded form of Shlamim, as we'll see here in the Mishnah. HaBechor, v'maser v'pesach. These three korbanot, the Bechor is the firstborn of an animal that's given to the Kohen. Maser is when you take Maser Behemah, you do the tenth animal that comes out of the corral that you consecrate to Hashem. But Pesach is the Korban of Pesach. Why these three are brought together is either because, we're going to see in the Gemara, they have a similar din with regards to their Matan Dam, which is that their Matan Dam is different than all the other Korbanot. They have that item that is common between them. That's why they're brought together here in the Mishnah. Or, Rambam says, they're all derivatives or subsets of Shlamim, and that's why they're brought together over here, because the Pasuk of Zot HaTorah never mentions them individually, so they must be a subset of something that Pasuk, and that is that they're a subset of Shlamim, and that's why they're brought together over here. And that will have an afkamina later on, as we'll see, that the Rishonim, like Rashi and Bali HaTosfot, are looking for sources for these Limudim, for these Korbanot. The Rambam just says that they're a subset of Shlamim. So, unless we are told otherwise, they're going to have the same din as a Shlamim. And that means including things like time, of Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. It's going to be governed by Shlamim, and you don't have to have a source. Rashi and the Bali Tosavot, who don't look at it in that way the Rambam does, are looking for a source for each one individually, for the fact that you have Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. Kodshim Kalim, they are Kodshim Kalim, which Rashi noted before, means that they don't have a din of Me'ilah, except for the items that are going to go in the Mizbeach after the Shkita. Shkitatam b'chol makom azarah, since they're kochim kalim, you can check them anywhere in the azarah, no need for tzafon. V'daman to'on matana achat, their dam requires one matana on the mizbeach, u'bavad shiten k'neged ha'yisod. As long as it's on a place in the mizbeach where there is yisod in that location, which means it must be done either on the northern or western side of the mizbeach. Shina b'achilatan, who eats them is different. Ha'b'chor nechal u'kohanim. A b'chor is one of the matnot kuhuna, and it's eaten by the kohanim. Hamaser is, as Rashi notes over here, the Torah never tells us that maser has to be given to the kohen, so we assume that maser is eaten by the baalim. So therefore, it's l'chol adam, can be eaten by anyone. Nechalim b'choleir, both of these korbanot can be eaten throughout the city. If you look in Rashi, how do you know they can be eaten throughout the city? Because the pasuk says, "Ve'etim shama olotechem, v'zivchechem, ve'et masorotechem." You bring up to Yerushalayim all of these items. Betanya b'sifrei Rabbi Akiva Omer v'shtei masorot ha'katuv medaber. It says masorotechem in plural. Echad maser beima v'echad maser dagan. That is both maser sheni and maser beima need to be brought up to Yerushalayim, but it means they can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Uchteva ukra. That same pasuk, it says, ubechorot bekarchem vitzonachem. And so that bechor would be then subject to the same din as the maser. And since it never tells you any limitation, it just says, go to Yerushalayim, bring it up to Yerushalayim, sounds like you need it anywhere in Yerushalayim. So that's Rashi's limud from where the bechor and maser, we know that they're eating bechol ha'ir. That is because maser, you have to see Freyder of Yakiva. And the Bechor that's found there, we assume it has the same din. The Bali and Tosafot are bothered by that view. Rashi, because he says that Sifrei over there says, Sonachem and Barachem also includes Chataot and Hashamot. Includes other Korbanot. And those are Korbanot that are Kodshei Kodashim that can only be eaten in the Azarah. How can you make a claim that Bechorot, can be eaten in Yerushalayim because there's no boundary? Well, you also learn out from there, Chataot and Hashamot. And there we don't say that they have no boundary. We say they have to be eaten in the Azarah. So how can you extrapolate from Maser to Bechor, when it's also Chatat and Hashem are found in that Pasuk? In addition, it does what's bothered by the fact that it says Lifnei Hashem by Bechor and Maser. And that would seem to indicate that you have to have a Shechita Lifnei Hashem, and they should have the same rules as Kodshei Kodushim. So therefore, he brings an alternate Pasuk. B'nireh denafkalai midichtiv. He learns out of a Pasuk of Lo tuchal lechol bish'arecha Maser degancha. The mashal b'sharecha u'dlo tuchal echol. You can't eat those at home. Hab Yerushalayim echol. There you're allowed to eat from maser beima gamar havara mibechor. And maser beima we learn through gzeir shava asher yavor tachad hashevet and varata petarechem. We learn there was a gzeir shava havara. So we learn out bechor from the pasuk of lo tuchal echol b'sharecha. And then we apply it to maser. The problem again is, it mentions chataot and hashamot over there. Therefore he says, it's learned from the fact that there's a hekesh between the b'chor maser and the chazev shok of the shlamim, which we'll see later on in daf nun zayin. And that's the source for the fact that it is b'chol ha'ir. Although the shita mikubetzet mitigates the Balei Tosfot's criticism of Rashi by saying that the pasuk is only talking about bringing up to Yerushalayim doesn't mean that they're all eaten in the same mechitza. Just means that all these items are brought to Yerushalayim. What you do with them in Yerushalayim is going to be different. The Chatot and Hashemot, they have a specification being the Azara. The other items that don't, they can be eaten before Yerushalayim. And therefore, maybe Rashi's source is a valid source. V'chol machal, you'll have to eat them any which way you please. L'shnei yamim v'layla yachad. For 2 days and one night. Rashi says, how do you know that? V'b'chor yalif labi gemara. In the b'chor, we're going to find out in the gemara. And he says, maser lo yadana me'echa. Maser, I don't know how you know that you can eat it for shnei yamim v'layla echad. The Bali at Tosafot quote an alternate version of the Rashi, which we don't have, which is that Rashi later on added in that it's learned through Gzer Shova of Havara Havara. So Bechor, we're going to learn it in the Gemara. And then for Maser, it's Gzer Shova de Bechor of Havara Havara. And that is what bothers the Tosafot because it says that means you can learn from something that is a Hekesh, you can learn to Gzer Shova. Because Bechor itself is learned from Shnei Yamim V'Layla Echad from a Hekesh. And now you're going to take that Hekesh and apply it to Maser through Gzer Shova. That's Gzer Shova built on top of a Hekesh. But we said on Daf Nun, it doesn't work. So how can Rashi claim that's the source of here? Benira, the Bible doesn't say, I think it's this way. The Maser Yalif Mishlanim B'Binyanav. Maser is born from Shlamim through a Binyanav, through a Memetzinu. Mashlamim Kutshim Kalim, Af Maser Kutshim Kalim. The Bechor Nami Aviyati Mishlamim. Bechor we were to learn from Shlamim as well. Ilav Mishom the Matana LeKohen. Had not been for the fact that it was a gift of the Kohen, we would learn Bechor from Shlamim as well and have the same status as Shlamim. Imkei Maser, Dolavi Matana LeKohen, Mishlamim Ati. So since it's not a Matana LeKohen, Maser will be governed by the paradigm of Shlamim and be governed by the rules of Shlamim, and that means Shnei Yamim, V'lai Lecha, and that's the source according to the Bali et Tosafot. HaPetzach, on the other hand, Eino Elchal El Balaylo, only allowed to eat it at night. And you know that the poor Pesach has to eat it at night because of the pasuk in Shmot that says, "Bachu et basar balayla zeh." You have to eat it on this night. So this night, or the night of Pesach, when you eat it, "Veinu ne'echal elach chatzot." You can only eat it until midnight. We'll see the machlok in the Gemara, machlok in Gemara Pesachim, we'll see the machlok here. Whether the karach chatzot is deoraita, or the karach chatzot is only midar abanan, like all the other kodoshim. "Veinu ne'echal elim nuav." You can only be eaten by those that are attached or appointed on the korban. You must buy your right before the shechitat ha-korban. And that's based on the pasuk of tevlifi achlo tachosu. According to those that you eat, tachosu there means that you do shechita. But the Gemara learns tachosu also means that you will be enumerated on it. Based on the number of eaters or participants, those will be able to participate or eat in the korban of Pesach. So that is liminuyav. You have to be appointed your piece of the korban Pesach before shechita. Veinu nechal ela tzalit. And it can only be eaten roasted, which is the requirement of the Korban of Pesach that it be roasted. But I just asked, why doesn't it mention that you have to have it with amatzot umarim yochlu? Why don't we mention that? It's also unique to the Korban of Pesach. But I just would say that we only mention items that are differentiated from other Korbanot. If other Korbanot have something different and you're differentiating, that's where they brought it down in the Mishnah. Over here, matzot umarim aren't relevant by any other Korban. So it's not going to bring it down as a contrasted item over here. That's one reason. Another reason may be that matzot umarim are not a din in the gufa korban. The son that comes or accompanies the korban, but not part of the gufa korban. Or the last possibility is that matzot umarim are not ma'akeh, the korban of Pesach. So for any one of those reasons, Mishnah does not bring down matzot umarim associated with the korban of Pesach. Matano, who's the author of our Mishnah? Amar Rav Chista, Rav Yossi Aglili. Rav Yossi Aglili is the author of our Mishnah. The Tanya, Rav Yossi Omer, Chelbol Benemar, Elo Chelbam. Doesn't say in the singular Chelbol, but Chelbam. Damol Benemar doesn't say Damol in the singular, Ela Damam. It says their blood in plural. Because it says in Parshat Korach, with regards to the Matno Takuna, Ev the Bechor, Ach Bechor Shor, or Bechor Kesef, or Bechor Eiz, Lotif De Kodeshem, Et Damam Tizrok Al Mizbeach, Vet Chelbam Taktir Yisher Reach Nechoach Lashem. So the question is, why is it written Damam and Chelbam? Could read the Pashtun of Pasuk as refers to the three different Bechorot that are mentioned in the beginning. The other end, Rabbi Yossi Glili says the Damam and Chelbam should have been Et Damo Et Chelbo, and the plurality comes to teach you that there are other Korbanot that are subject to the din of Bechor, and that is the Masa and the Pesach have the same din as the Bechor, because they have no specification of their Matnot Dam. Therefore, they're going to be governed by this plurality in the Pasuk in Pashat Korach. From here you see that the Bechor Maaser Pesach all require matan dam, and emurim, the gavei mizbeach, because the fact that it wrote it in plural, damam and chalbam, indicating that it's including something else. Rabbi Shmuel does have a dissenting opinion that says that Pesach is bishvicha, because we learn it out from v'yadam zivachecha yishafech, that is the din of shvicha, which means to pour the dam onto the yisod mizbeach, not sprinkle it, and that leads to a nafkamina and a machloket in the last Mishnah and Pesachim, regards to whether the birkat hazevach and the birkat Pesach can be motzi one and another. Depends on whether you think the Pesach has a similar matan dam to the zevach or has a different matan dam. Kenegedi so minalan. How do you know that you have to do these matan dam a place where there is a yisod? Amar lazer hachi of zvika, zvika meola. It's a gzeirah shava of zvika, zvika from ola, but ola gufa minalan. And how do you know by ola that there is such a din that has to be put on the mizbeach kenegedi yisod? Dichtiv el yisod mizbach haola. The pasuk says that yisod mizbach ola be made al olat chovash tuna yisod. Tells you that olat chovah requires yisod. As Rashi points out over here, the limud that the Gemara brings does not exist. We had this earlier in the perek, and this is not what we learned from the pasuk. We learned from the pasuk that yisod mizbach ola. We had three times that this pasuk showed up, and one of the times we said was to use to teach you that all korbanot need to have their sheirei adam put on the yisod. That's what the Braita taught us. The fact that you have to put the primary matnot dam in a place where there's yisod was a kal v'chomer. If that which is sheirei adam requires it to be by yisod, certainly the primary dam should have to be by yisod. So it's actually from a kal v'chomer, not from the pasuk itself. So Rashi knows over here is that the Gemara in many places does this. It writes a shorthand limud and basically saying, go look over there and you'll know what it means. If you go look over there, a yisod mizbach ola, we had a havamina that it meant the primary dam. But it says you don't need the primary dam because you can learn that from a kal v'chomer. Once you have the kal v'chomer, we use yisod mizbach ola to teach us that there's a requirement about that the sheirei adam have to go on the gaga yisod. And from that, we get a kal v'chomer to the primary damim. So it's a shorthand form of telling us that what which you saw before. Now the Gemara says, if you're going to compare it to an ola, imal alan shtei matanot shein arba, then why don't you say just like an ola has the requirement of matanot dam der shtayim shein arba, afkan shtei matanot shein arba. Why don't you say the same thing by the Bechor, the Matzah, and the Pesach, that they should have that requirement of shtei matanot shein arba. Am Rabbaye, lama lo mikhtav saviv ola saviv b'chatat. Why do I need the word saviv to appear by ola and by chatat? Abu shnei k'tuvim abayim k'echad, two psukim that come to teach the same din, kol shnei k'tuvim abayim k'echad, im lamdim. Any two psukim that come to teach the same din, they're no longer a paradigm, they're an exception to the rule. Abaye is suggesting is the word saviv is what precipitates the need for shtayim shehein arba. That word saviv appears by ola. That's how we know ola needs shtayim shehein arba. It also appears by the chatat, which is somewhat problematic, because the chatat, do it on the arba karnot. So Tosfot says that the saviv of chatat is extraneous, because it says arba karnot. That only works according to certain deot. Other deot need the saviv to tell you can't do it on shtei karnot. You have to go to each karen separately. Then you would have to say that the saviv of the ola is extraneous. Many of multiple times that the word saviv appears by the ola. But in either case, it's somewhat difficult that the Gemara is comparing saviv of the chatat and saviv of the ola when they have different matnot dam. So those want to suggest that there's actually a gzeir shova of saviv, which is unnecessary because of what the Baal Tosafot say that I already have to put it on the four karnot. So then, why do I need a gzeir shova from ola to teach me that it is saviv? It has to go on the old four karnot. And that's what makes it extraneous over here. And that's what makes it into shnei k'tuvim abayim k'echad, because you have a pasuk that, in a sense, is repeating a din that doesn't need to be repeated, or teaching us a din that doesn't need to be repeated. Which helps out with the question that Rashi asks over here, which is, says, Eim lamdim, apagav da'acha la b'binyan av, anu bayim l'umod. Generally, shnei k'tuvim b'yachad is used when you're using a binyan av, to tell you that the binyan av is not good, it's not paradigmatic, it's an exception. Nevertheless, the shmi'an abayi, the shnei k'tuvim b'yachad, echad, eim lamdim, afilu b'gzeir shava. That they have an application even by gzeir shava. And there you see evidence in Rashi that he thinks that this saviv, or the limud here, is associated with the gzeir shava. These are shnei k'tuvim b'yachad, echad, that are teaching the same din to tell you it's only true here, and you cannot extrapolate it to other korbanot. Which means that only these korbanot have a din of shtayim shein arba, not other korbanot, like the Bechor, the Maaser, and the Pesach. That works well according to one who says, when you have two psukim, they're exception, not the rule. According to one who says, you do, what are you going to do over here? You have a situation in which you should have learned it from Allah. Havi Asham Shlosha. Asham also there, the word Saviv appear. Shlosha Vadayim Labdim. According to everyone, if you have three psukim telling you the same thing, that's a miut and not a paradigm. Therefore, it definitely will exclude any other korban. That means that these korbanot do not require Shtayim Shem Arba, even though they're connected to the Olah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph.